Chinatown of Stoughton and Brockton, McGinnis Motors over in West Bridgewater. We have with us right now one of the legends in show business. He has a brand new book out. It's called Been There, Done That, which pretty much talks about his life. Eddie Fisher joins us. Hi, Eddie.
Hi.
How are you?
Pretty good. How are you, Rod?
Good. Nice to talk to you. My name is Mark Snyder, and you're on with us right now. This is a very interesting book about your life. I mean, you have done so many things in so little time. It seems like you've been around forever.
I have been around forever.
But, I mean, you know, it's interesting. Nowadays, we talk about tabloid headlines. You know, everybody's complaining about the tabloid world we lived in. But you actually went through all this decades ago.
Well, yes. Actually, it's been since I was... 18 years old.
Yeah, I mean, you had a very interesting history. I mean, you got into the business at a very young age, and were discovered by a legend himself.
Eddie Cantor.
Right.
Yeah, back in 1949, up in the Catskill Mountains at a place called Grossinger's, which doesn't exist any longer.
Right. That was of course, a place where everybody played years ago. Before Vegas and Atlantic City and all that became the place to play.
Oh, that was a breaking in place where everybody came out and you know, broke in their acts and got tremendous experience there.
Now, you were about 22 years old when it really hit, right?
Well, yes, you could, 22, yes.
Yeah. I mean, what was it like to be a young guy like that and have all this sudden adulation of fame?
Well, it was very, very exciting. And, of course, it was my dream. It was my destiny to be in show business and be an important singer of songs. And my dream came true, and I didn't work very hard for it. I was very, very lucky.
Well, you may have been lucky, but and certainly things fell together for you, but you had to have the talent to have that kind of success, though.
Yes, I had a pretty good singing voice, and it was recognized when I was, you know, 3 or 4 years old. But I started out on singing in the temple, and then I sang on the radio in Philadelphia, and had, again, tremendous experience singing every night on the radio.
Did you ever consider when you were a young child becoming a cantor?
No, that was, I think, something my father wanted, but my wishes were beyond that, it never was very. There's never been a cantor who has been, you know, a star known in the Jewish religion. Yes, but outside that, I mean, I think there was a singer for the Metropolitan Opera, Richard Tucker, who was famous cantor, but other than that, I don't remember anyone.
I guess the most famous cantor was probably Eddie Cantor, huh?
Right on.
Now, you had your first 22 records that you put out were hits.
Well, it wasn't the first. There were 3 or 4 that we put out that RCA Victor put out before that. Didn't make the charts at all. But then, once I put out a hit record called "Thinking of You" in 1950, that was the beginning of the 22 hits in a row.
Hmm. You know, and you went into the service. As a matter of fact, it's a very small world because my dad was in the Korean War. And I never forget him saying to me that he saw you perform. And I guess you did perform for the troops out there.
Yeah, I was there for two months in July and August of 1952. And my whole experience in the service, the 2 years that I put in, was one of the greatest experiences of my life, one of the happiest and most rewarding.
Mm. Now, President Truman called you his favorite private first class.
Yeah, I was the only one he knew. But that was a very thrilling experience, being in the Oval Office with Truman. And as soon as I walked in, he said, "How's my favorite PFC?" You know, and he had known what my request was. He said, "Not only am I going to send you to Korea, I'm going to send you all over the world." And he did that, and it was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Mm. Now, you got engaged and married Debbie Reynolds, which, of course, made huge headlines everywhere. And everybody thought that Debbie Reynolds is the ideal wife. She was the perfect woman. But in your book, you talk about a few shortcomings.
That's putting it mildly.
Yeah.
But it's true. I think we find out after we get married, we find out things that we didn't know before we were married. I think marriage puts a different face on everything, and we guide it along. But we had a 3-year marriage, and it was doomed from the beginning, although we had two fantastic kids. I think that my whole life up until now as a married man was a failure in every respect. It firstly and most important was that I was not a father. I was taken in a different direction, and I, you know, how important it is today to be a family and raise children. I never did that. I was busy singing all over the world and on television and recordings and movies, and I thought it was the role of a father to just be the breadwinner. That's from an old school. Many people believe that, and I'm one of those people that believed it.
Mm. There's a song that's out now called "Busy Man" that Billy Ray Cyrus sings, and one of the words is something like, "No one ever has on their gravestone, I wish I worked a little bit more." You know?
Although I was pretty lazy too. I mean, I was so lucky in my career. Things happened so easily for me that I went in another direction that way too. I wasn't a hard working, driving young man. I was lazy, and even though I did a lot in my time, I did it lay back style, and I was not a real out and out go getter, and I didn't want to be, and I still don't want to be.
Aside from the obvious problems that you had with Debbie Reynolds and subsequent wives, how difficult is it, though, to live in the public eye? I mean, it must be, even if you have a perfect marriage and you get along fine, there's so many things that can happen when you're living in a public life, isn't there?
Well, I think it's the toughest thing in the world. And also, when you're in the public eye and you are in show business or politics or sports or whatever profession, I think it's the most difficult thing in the world to have a successful marriage. Not that I, you know, put myself up as proof. I think that only the exceptional people make it with a career and marriage. I think it's a very tough thing to balance the two.
It is, and I always have a lot of admiration for people who can do both.
Yeah, I can't think of many, but I'm sure there are a great deal, but I only know Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward.
Hmm. Now, you mentioned two of your children, Carrie and Todd, by Debbie Reynolds. You also had two others,
yes.
Jolie and Tricia.
Yes.
They must bring you great joy.
Well, right now, they all are unhappy about the book. They bring me have brought me great joy, but not that I deserved it because I wasn't there for them.
Mm.
But I love them so much, but I guess I didn't love them enough to get into being a father and help raising them. I did not raise my children.
And I assume that one of the reasons they're mad is that you're tearing apart their mothers in the book.
I think that I think most of them knew. I think they all knew the contents of the book, but I think they think it was not a good idea for me to write about it in the book. They, you know, to write it a tell-all, kiss-and-tell book. I guess it's considered tabloid today, and
mm-hmm.
but I think there were many that were written down through the ages, and I had written a book earlier, and I was very unhappy with it because I held back so much. I didn't tell the complete story. I just told parts of it, and in this book, I touch an awful lot of bases, and there are people who are very unhappy with it because they think I spoke out too much,
well,
to say the least.
Most people don't want to hear that kind of stuff, but there is obviously a huge amount of people who do want to hear it.
Yes, it's on the bestseller list on the New York Times, and in Los Angeles it was number 5, and now it's number 4. And it's doing tremendously well.
It's called Been There, Done That from St. Martin's Press. We're talking with the legendary Eddie Fisher. You know, we talked briefly about marriage, and one of the things you were married to, Elizabeth Taylor. And to this day, people like my mother hate Elizabeth Taylor and didn't like Burton because of what happened to you. That all played out in the press. And I assume that you were not only hurt personally by seeing what happened during the filming of that film that brought together Elizabeth and her
Burton.
Richard Burton, but also just seeing it all played out in the press must have been very, very painful for you.
Well, it was more than the press. I mean, it would be the actual happening in Rome was a blow that you know shocked me to death almost, and. The Vatican condemned them for it, but I, you know, those things do happen. It is supposed to have happened to me. I left Debbie, and people will only believe that I left Debbie for Elizabeth, which is not completely true. But you know, that's the way it went down, and that there's nothing I can do that can change that. The way that is thought of today.
Mm. I actually spoke with Connie and Jolie a little while ago on this program as well.
Oh, yeah?
Very personable folks. Very nice.
Yeah, I watched Connie last night on Larry King Live.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked terrific.
She's all right.
But she denied practically everything.
Well, of course. Of course she's going to do that. You didn't expect her not to, did you?
Well, I thought that there are some things that you just cannot forget, and those are the things that are in my book. Things I could never forget, no matter what happened to me in my life, whatever my problem was with drugs. I have such vivid memory of all the things I wrote about the book and enough information for 3 or 4 more books.
Mm.
But, I mean, I listened very closely to Connie. She's a great girl, and I was very, very attracted to her. And after we got married, it was over.
Mm.
Because we had 2 children, one before we were married and one just right almost the second after we were married.
Mm.
The marriage didn't last too long, and I again didn't raise my children. So a lot that, you know, Connie had to speak about the other last night was in a lot of ways true, but she told me that I should remember the good things that happened, and but she didn't remember any good things.
You know, you mentioned drugs and booze and all this kind of stuff. I mean, you really spent a lot of time with some pretty bad habits there.
Yep.
Did you know they were bad at the time? Did you ever really work at them? Or was it something that, were your parents addicts at all? Or did you have
no, they were just plain ordinary folks. My father smoked, but he stopped at, well, he smoked for a long time, but my mother didn't take an aspirin. We didn't know about Tylenol at the time. no one in my family had the problem I had. I think it had a lot to do to the business I was in and how quickly I went into it. I wasn't really ready to handle it. So, but the real thing that I really became addicted is when after Rome, after the middle of the shooting of Cleopatra, when Elizabeth and Dickie Boy got together, that was the beginning of my real addiction.
You kind of spiral out of control there for a while.
Oh, yes, absolutely. For a long while. But it didn't hurt my memory. In fact, it might have instilled them even more. I don't want to say anything ever in a million years in the defense of drugs, but my memory is I can't believe how terrific it is.
it's interesting. This whole thing with the drugs and the booze and the music, and one of the things that permeates the book is your women. You had lots of beautiful women in your time. And in fact, you know, nowadays with President Clinton and the sexual addiction thing coming out, it seems to me like he was a minor leaguer compared to you.
Well, I must tell you that whatever is in my book, I could be a minor leaguer to many of the superstars from the beginning of show business or... When you are in the status of superstardom, or you have tremendous celebrity, or you're a Bobby Sox idol, or you're a woman or man, you immediately have access to your co-stars, you know, and it's not uncommon. It is, in fact, it's very common that people playing opposite each other fall in love. So although I did have a full life with women, which I do love women. there are others who have gone far. I look like a Boy Scout compared to them.
You know, a couple of things in the book really stand out in terms of something to talk about here, because Judith Campbell Exton just passed away a little while ago.
Yes, I read.
And of course, she was with C.N.G. and Connor and JFK, or she claims to have been. You were friends with both of them, weren't you? Or at least you had dealings with both, right?
Yeah, and I didn't have dealings with them. I was friendly with both, C.N.G. and Connor, and JFK was a great hero of mine, and I'm I mean that from, you know, all the people that I met in my life, in every walk of life, he had the most charisma, and he made movie stars and the greatest looking people in the world. I think, in my opinion, there was no other that came close.
Hmm. He had some kind of special charisma, and I guess he passed it down to his son, who had the same kind of charisma.
Oh, absolutely. That almost shook me as when his father died. I mean, I didn't know him, but I looked upon him as such a fine, wonderful young man.
Hmm.
And it's sad that the so much of the family is only Teddy is left, and I knew Pat Kennedy. She was married to
Peter Lawford.
Yes. And I knew all the girls, but JFK Jr. I thought he would one day be president.
He might have.
Yes.
You never know. He was not a political kind of guy, but.
Well, I think that was what was so great about him is that he had a completely different approach. He was not political, but that made him more. I think that made him more.
Attractive? More attractive for the job?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I think to be so political today is not an asset. Clinton, I think, was the most political and, I think, brilliant man. I'm sure that, in my mind, that Jack Kennedy Jr. would have been, I don't think they called him Jack, did they?
No. You know, it's interesting when you talk about non-politicians, people like Reagan and Warren Beatty now saying he wants to run for something, and a number of these folks, Gopher on Love Boat, who was a senator, and Sonny Bono, and have you ever thought at all about politics yourself?
Not for a moment, no. No, I'm not. I was having the time of my life, and I was doing the only thing that I know how to do is sing. And it was thrilling. I loved being in the spotlight and not having to talk my way through things, but sing my way through things.
Hmm. You mentioned Peter Lawford momentarily ago. I want to talk a little bit about the Rat Pack. Tell me a little bit about Sinatra and some of these guys that that we don't know personally, Sammy Davis Jr., what they would like to hang out with.
Oh, they were tremendous fun. They were all, completely different human beings, and they had their own personality, and yet they clicked together so beautifully, and it was magic. I was one of their foils. I was one of the people that they attacked on stage, and interrupted the performance, which was always a great relief from doing the regular show. They would come on and they were so funny and so friendly. But one night, they came on an opening of mine at the Coconut Grove in Los Angeles, and which they had done with me many times. This was an opening, and they came out, and the audience, which was all of the people of Hollywood, were there. It was a tremendous turnout, and the audience proceeded to boo them. But they still tried to go on and perform. And I sat down on the band on the edge of the bandstand, and I sat there and I was watching this, and it was something unique. And the audience was not responding, and I sat there, and a picture was taken of me, and it looked like I was downhearted or something. And they snapped the picture, and the big story was the night the Klan, you called the Rat Pack, murdered Eddie Fisher. And it was not that at all, but that's how the story went, and I guess it'll stay that way if it's remembered at all.
Mm.
The people that were there remembered it. But that was the end of the Rat Pack. But they had been around. They had interrupted so many people's acts, and so that was like the last time they really performed as a trio.
Huh. You know, you've done so many great songs. In fact, I have some of them here in my singles collection. Any that you really, really enjoy singing, your favorites?
Well, I've been singing them for a long time, and it's tough to, although if you're a pro, you're supposed to make it sound like you're singing it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I could do that for a while, but after a while I found it difficult. But I had to sing those songs, so that's what the people, those are the songs that people came to hear me sing. And so, you know, I always closed with "Oh My Papa," and I did "Wish You Were Here," and "Heart," and "I Need You Now," and I very rarely did "Thinking of You." "Count Your Blessings," which was made a hit by, it was a bomb until Eisenhower introduced me on television singing it, and it was a smash the next day.
What about "Tonight"?
Oh, I love "Tonight."
Because I
love singing that song.
Your version is really, I have that on
three different verses, and I love all the lyrics.
Yeah, because I have that solo, the single of that.
I use to use that as an opening a lot.
It's a nice song. You know, since we talked about Sinatra for a minute, I'm going to leave the interview here on PNP Network with Eddie Fisher with this question. One of Sinatra's great trademark songs has a line that says, "Regrets. I've made a few," or "I've had a few." Any regrets?
Of course I have regrets, and I've made more than a few. But life is full of regrets, I think, and you have to learn to live through them.
Is the biggest regret you have not spending more time with the kids when they were young?
Yeah, that's, I'm very guilt-ridden about that, and I guess that'll be with me for the rest of my life.
Well, hopefully if you can connect with the kids, this book hasn't helped them too much, but maybe before it's all said and done, you can settle it out.
Yeah, I'll wait. My daughter Jolie is opening here in Cabaret. She'll be here for 16 weeks. She's doing the Liza Minnelli part.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope by November that I got to be at the opening. It's my daughter. She sings like I sing. Better.
Yeah, well, you can still go there, even if, you know.
Oh, that's right.
You can always go.
Yeah.
And walk backstage and do what you got to do.
I'll be there no matter what.
The book is called Been There, Done That. It's St. Martin's Press. And Eddie Fisher, it's been a thrill for me to sit and talk with you.
Same here, Mark. I hope we can talk again sometime.
I would love to. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.